The following recording is offered by the Village Zendo. For more information, please visit villagezendo.org.
Good evening, all. It's very good to be with you tonight. If I'm not mistaken, I see a few people who may be friends from the Empty Hand Zendo, and maybe there are even some people from the Deep Ocean Zendo tonight. It's good to have you with us. This is a special evening because tonight we are marking the 49th day since the passing of our dear friend, Sensei Robert Kaku Gun. And we'll have the memorial service after this talk. We did have an occasion to come together as a Sangha and remember Kaku shortly after he died. And I thought I would say a few words about Kaku from my own perspective and just comment on a couple of qualities of his practice that stand out for me and have inspired me. One is what a number of people talked about when we had our Sangha gathering. And that is, Kaku was a multifaceted guy. But one of the qualities that I think we saw in whatever community of his that we were a part of was his kindness. So some people talked about seeing that in the Dokusan room, an interview with Kaku. Some people have talked to me about seeing it in his psychotherapy practice. Some of us saw it when we were living together doing residential retreats. Others just interacting with him around the Zendo. And I associate that kindness of his with the fact that he had a lot of experience in spiritual communities. Kaku was a pastor in the United Church of Christ for 38 years. That's a lot of dedication and commitment to spiritual community. He was not just a participant in the congregation, he was the leader of it. And he assumed a large responsibility for everyone in his community. And I think that that is something that came from his experience as a pastor. His pastoral experience was something that we all actually experienced and benefited from in our community. It's something that I looked up to in him. And so I remember that after I ordained to be a Zen priest, I went to Kaku for advice about how to be a priest. Not long after I was ordained, an old and dear friend of mine asked me to officiate in his marriage. I didn't really know how to go about that, so I went to Kaku for advice. I said, Kaku, I'm supposed to officiate in this wedding. What do you think is the most important thing about the wedding ceremony for the bride and groom? And Kaku said to me, getting it over with. So I said, that sounded like wise words. And I said, and what do you tell the bride and groom when you talk to them before they get married? What counsel do you give them? And he said, well, basically, I warn them about the three main pitfalls in any marriage. And I said, and what are the three main pitfalls in any marriage? And he said, money, sex, and in-laws. And I thought, wise words. And I said, and what do you advise them about how to deal with those pitfalls? And he said, I just tell them to try to communicate together as best they can. And I thought that sounded very, very down to earth. So I think that kindness in Kaku, I associate it anyway with his long experience in spiritual communities as a pastor and his sense of service, ultimately. That's something that I have admired about Kaku. The other thing is a point that we didn't talk about so much in the Sangha gathering, and I was struggling a little bit with how to express this quality, but I think maybe the word that is closest to it is spiritual aspiration. Maybe dedication gets at it as well. But I think that Kaku had great spiritual aspiration. He, of course, was practicing and training to be a Christian minister for a long time. Eventually, he got into Zen, and then he practiced Zen for a long time, and side by side with his ministry. But he practiced for a long time, and until the end of his life, he practiced actively. And I remember after he really became integrated at Village Zendo, after leaving Zen Mountain Monastery, for example, after he became a senior student and could give Dharma talks, Kaku never missed an opportunity to give a Dharma talk. If there was an opening, Kaku would seize the opportunity. Not everyone feels so inclined to give Dharma talks, but Kaku never passed up the opportunity. And after I was able to start giving interview, I would see Kaku in the interview room. And he would come in and he would always be working diligently on his koans. And at one point he came to me after I had ordained and he said, you know, I'm thinking of ordaining to be a Zen priest. And I said, Kaku, why would you possibly want to ordain to be a Zen priest? You're already a priest. You've been there. You've done that. I mean, for me, someone who didn't grow up religious, didn't believe in organized religion, I thought maybe I could learn something from being a Zen priest. But what more do you have to learn? Isn't it just putting another hat on top of the hat that you've already got on your head? So Kaku, he was Kaizen back in those days, actually. Kaizen took that and probably chewed on it for a while. And eventually he came back and he told me, I don't know if it was a year later, 2 years later, he said, I finally decided I am going to ordain and Roshi has agreed. And so he did that. And I think I didn't fully understand it at the time, but I now see it as part of this aspiration. He felt that there was more that he had to learn. He wanted to take his practice in new directions, to deepen his practice, and to continue his service. And he saw a way to do that in ordaining. And then after receiving Dharma transmission, even though he was frail and ultimately sick, he took up the guiding teacher position at Empty Hand Zendo. Once again, taking on a major responsibility for a whole community of people. I know he loved practicing with that community, and I think he was loved by that community in turn, and they appreciated his kindness and service. But again, he had that energy and aspiration. He wanted to, I remember, introduce all sorts of new forms of practice at Empty Hand. He said, at Empty Hand, they don't do Orioki. We could introduce Orioki, which is so beautiful. And I said, Kaku, but, you know, maybe the way they do things is okay. Maybe they don't actually need Orioki. Orioki means just enough. Maybe their practice now is just enough. I felt like I had to rein him in a little bit, but he always had that enthusiasm. And it didn't stop him, even though he was getting older and sicker. didn't stop him from doing a Jukai ceremony for, I think, around 8 people. That's a major task that he undertook, but it was important for him. And then he decided to move to Virginia Beach. He was getting more frail. He needed the care of his daughters. He went to Virginia Beach, and what did he do? He started a new Zen center from scratch. He didn't inherit an existing one. He started a new one from scratch. It was unbelievable. And I remember getting emails from him. He's setting up the website. What do you think of these materials? And it was remarkable. And he did found the Deep Ocean Zendo. And there are people who are now practicing because of Kaku. And maybe some of you here tonight were part of that. So to me, this aspiration and dedication is something that I find inspiring. Now, I think that aspiration in practice is a subtle thing. It can be a double-edged thing. I think many of us come to practice because of some aspiration. Everyone here tonight is here because we have some sort of aspiration. Usually when we start out, we want to end our own suffering. Most commonly, maybe we really want to wake up and get shed the delusions that we are that we carry with us. But it's easy for the energy of aspiration to morph into something that's not so healthy. That's a kind of acquisitiveness. Chogyam Trungpa talked about spiritual materialism. Maybe to look good in front of others, or maybe to fill a hole in ourselves, to get something, to gain something. And of course, this is entirely the opposite of the deep teaching in Buddhism. No path, no wisdom, and no gain. No gain, and thus the bodhisattva lives prajnaparamita. Ultimately, the idea of gaining anything is completely futile and deluded. But if we only hang on to that absolute sense of the teachings, we can get stuck there. And so we do also need the energy of aspiration in our practice, I think, to keep our practice alive minute to minute, to keep learning, to keep growing, and to keep waking up moment after moment. So this is what different Buddhist traditions we think of as bodhicitta, the aspiration to wake up. Bodhi means awakening, citta, the mind of waking up, the mind of Buddha or the mind of bodhisattva in our Mahayana tradition. But this desire to arouse the Bodhi mind is not a self-centered, self-indulgent practice, because ultimately ourselves are connected to everything else. So any real awakening has to be with everyone and everything else. It can't merely be personal or individual or self-indulgent. Kaku loved Dogen, Master Dogen, and there's a story from Dogen's life that I associate with this spirit of bodhicitta. Many of you will know the story, but as a young man, Dogen went to China. He eventually found his way to Tiang Tong Monastery, and he met his teacher, Zhu Jing. And one night during a long and intense retreat, the monk sitting next to Dogen fell asleep, and the master, Zhu Jing, came up behind him and yelled at the monk and said, "The study of Zen is casting off the body-mind. So why are you practicing single-mindedly seated slumber when you can practice single-minded seated meditation?" And those vigorous words from Zhu Jing struck a chord in Dogen, and he had an awakening experience. And he went and he met Zhu Jing in the abbot's quarters, and they had a private interview. And Dogen said, "I've come because body-mind is cast off." And Zhu Jing must have looked at him and seen the look on his face and in his eyes and heard the tone of his voice and seen his comportment. And Zhu Jing said, "Body, mind, cast away, body, mind." Zhu Jing, in other words, confirmed Dogen's awakening. And then Dogen said something that I used to find very strange and puzzled over. Dogen said, "Please don't grant the seal indiscriminately." And then Zhu Jing said, casting off. So this response of Dogen's, "Please don't grant the seal indiscriminately," I used to think, what does that mean? Does it mean that Dogen really doubted the quality of his experience? He was unsure about his own open heart in that moment. But the way I see it now is that Dogen was saying, "Please don't confirm me, and please don't transmit to me in too easy a way, or too quick a way, or too loose a way." And I think what Dogen was saying in a way is that happened a moment ago. And right now, I want to awaken freshly in this moment. Please don't grant the seal indiscriminately. I think Dogen was saying that he was not attached to that experience that he had. And he was expressing his own aspiration to achieve Bodhi mind. He didn't say, "Oh, thank you, teacher, for confirming me. Oh, how wonderful. Oh, how beautiful." He didn't say, "Yay," and give a fist pump. And he didn't say, "Now I can go back to Japan and show others how to do it." He said, "Please don't grant the seal indiscriminately." And Zhu Jing said, casting off. So I think I took that too as if Zhu Jing were saying maybe, and that's an injunction, you should cast off your enlightenment experience. But I see it now as if Zhu Jing was saying, once again, confirming Dogen in what Dogen had just said. Yes, confirming Dogen in his casting off his own enlightenment experience and in his new and fresh aspiration to realize Bodhi mind in this moment. The last Thursday of every month, we used to do a Fusatsu atonement ceremony. We haven't been able to do that in the Zoom era. But we have kept up a tradition of speaking about one of the precepts. And the precept that I'm speaking about tonight is the first of the 16 Bodhisattva precepts, the one out of which all the others flow. We have the 10 grave Bodhisattva precepts of moral conduct, which come out of the 3 pure precepts of not doing harm, doing good for others. which come out of the three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. And Buddha, Dharma, Sangha come out of Buddha. Buddha, the awakened nature of all beings. Not a narrow personal awakening, but an awakening with interconnection of all things and all beings. When we do our atonement ceremony, we manifest the first precept of Buddha in a variety of ways. At the beginning of the ceremony, we bow down repeatedly and we invoke the different manifestations of Buddha, the historical Buddha Shakyamuni, the manifestation of compassion, Avalokiteshvara, the manifestation of wisdom, Manjusri, and so on and so forth. We bow down and we put our head to the ground and we raise up our hands, raising up Buddha, raising up Bodhi mind. And we chant with that the Sanskrit term Namu. Namu means honor. So we honor each of these manifestations of the Buddha. We pay homage to the different Buddha energies. But when we engage wholeheartedly and cast off the body mind, bowing down, chanting, head to the ground, hands raised, the honoring of the Buddha is itself the arousing of Bodhi mind and is itself the realization of Bodhi mind. And hence what might seem like a dualistic practice of honoring something that is other than ourselves becomes a practice of unity with Bodhi mind. It is a practice of atonement or at-one-ment with Bodhi mind. And at the end of the ceremony, we invoke the three treasures and we say, with all sentient beings, raise the Bodhi mind. Let the supreme way be realized. We kneel down, hands in gassho, and we chant and we cast off the body mind. Again, not in any narrow sense of self, but in the broadest sense of self with all sentient beings. We raise the Bodhi mind. We arouse the aspiration to wake up with all sentient beings, to let the supreme way be realized. So in the midst of the impermanence of our lives, Kaku's passing can be an opportunity for all of us to arouse Bodhi mind, to wake up in this very moment, as well as in every moment, no matter how difficult that we face, including in the moments of the loss of loved friends and family member, we have the opportunity to awaken the Bodhi mind. And I think we can also take Kaku's lifelong dedication to spiritual practice as an inspiration for ourselves, that we may all practice wisdom and compassion moment to moment, hopefully for the rest of our lives, as Kaku did. So to honor Kaku, I'll leave you with a few final words, which are Kaku's own words. Endless bows for an endless practice.